We're back, Binsner and Bailey, and we're going to have an exciting next hour. We're really going to talk about some things that are going to rock some people's world. And that's the idea, is we're trying to rock the boat. And
we want you to see things differently.
Yes.
We talked about a paradigm shift, and that's what we have to do. We have to understand that we have a system in place where there is redress by the local citizens to a government that's out of control. And if we don't use that redress by going and petitioning, then we basically don't do our duty as citizens. And I'll tell you what I think. I think a lot of people have given up. I think they've given up because they don't see results. They see stonewalling at every avenue. When they go to their local council or they go to their local county board, they get a short shrift. They'll have someone there at the board that pretends to listen to them. But then when they ask for something, there'll be no answer. The board will continue to act, and so on and so forth. Well, we've got a couple of guys here, Kirk Allen and John Kraft of the Edgar County Watchdogs. Welcome to the program tonight, folks. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate it. We want to get right into this because these guys have been doing a lot of hard work. But before we get into what they're finding, why don't I throw this out, and I'll let each one of you tell us how you came about. How did the group, the Edgar County Watchdogs, come about, and what drew you to that that effort to start uncovering things in local government that may need to redress?
Well, for me, it was probably one of the first ambulance calls. We risk a lot to save a lot, risk little to save little. And during one of those ambulance calls, it was for a six-week-old baby not breathing. And long story short, when I get there, the baby was breathing, thank God, and no dispatcher was talking that parent through any type of first aid or medical care or anything, and that led to a few FOIAs to our 911 folks, and we identified that our dispatchers had not been certified for over 6 years.
Now, you say, now, let's back up a step for people who don't know what that terminology is. FOIA is the Freedom of Information Request Act that allows a citizen to go in, or anybody, a news organization as well uses this, to file papers asking for documents showing, proving what the government's doing and seeing if it's there.
And in this case, we proved what they weren't doing.
Okay.
They weren't doing their job. And my primary concern was the risk not only to the people in the community with not getting proper medical care or medical direction on a 911 call, but the liability that comes with dispatchers not being certified. And that was the first case of stonewalling from our public body locally. I videotaped it, and that's when I met John, who runs a video studio as well, and he helped me get that first video online. And our first story ever was ran on the news with Eastern Illinois University.
Really? That's great. So originally, when you first started with this, you actually got your information out, and the news media found that it was important enough to put it on as a news story.
One time.
Well, sure, but it worked.
But at least it worked. That's right.
Okay, so let's take a step back. You got involved from the 911 issue in your county, but before that, this watchdog group, where did the idea come from? I mean, there was a guy that ran for governor. Talk about that angle a little bit.
The one that ran for governor.
Well, that's Adam, right?
Adam Mangieski?
Yes. And wasn't he involved in this a little bit in talking about getting these, not necessarily your group, but around the state, or am I wrong with that information?
Well, Adam does very similar things that we do. We identify, okay, you know, where the local spending is, mm-hmm, you know, through the FOIAs, and we expose it. He was running for governor, and we basically were doing more or less the same thing in different parts of the country. You know, you referenced earlier in your show dealing with national. Well, he's dealing with stuff at the state level.
Sure.
And we basically took the position that if we can't fix our local communities, villages, municipalities, and counties, we can never fix the state.
Okay, and John, let me throw this over to you for a second. Give me a little bit of the same kind of flavor there as to how you got involved, why you saw the need to become involved at the local level, just as a citizen.
Well, I attended a meeting and asked one question, and I got lied to at the meeting.
Can you believe that?
Is that pretty typical? I mean,
we've got lied to.
That happens a lot, doesn't it?
And, you know, I hadn't met Kirk before that, and
okay,
and we were at a dinner sitting across the table from each other just talking, and we just looked at each other and explained our experiences and just said, well, let's do something about it. So we did.
And so after that, it sort of has been, I want to say, a whirlwind tour, because you don't just work out of Edgar County. You've expanded it sort of to a regional effort.
Yeah, anymore. Well, we've been to Ford County, Iroquois County, Douglas, down around Albion, and a little bit of Coles County, not too much yet. But majority of it has been in Edgar, but lately it's been in Ford and Iroquois.
Now, this 911 issue, back to Kirk for a moment. When you found out about the 911, there were some other things, too, and your background happens to be in emergency services, so you're very well-versed in that avenue. You could see that there was something going on there, but you had explained to me earlier when I talked to you that there were some issues also with the local fire department that you were involved with, and you began to see things there, too.
Yeah, our local fire department there in Kansas, you know, when I got out of the military and moved back to the farm, you know, I volunteered and became a part of the local department, and my first comment of asking to see the budget, I was told it's none of my business.
Really? That's public money and tax money we're talking about here.
Yeah, and it was a situation where the trustees had done it their way for so long, and nobody had ever questioned them, and our treasurer happened to be the bank president, and we were drawing 0.9% interest on the taxpayers' money while everybody else is drawing 7 and 8%. And equipment that was just absolutely outdated and defective, and they wouldn't spend money on that. But, boy, they didn't hesitate to spend money with, you know, new batteries with the local mechanic twice a year and oil changes twice a year and all these other little things that they just had their own little serfdom going. And if you weren't a part of it, you know, you either buck up and do what they say or get out. And we decided to fight it.
So what? Give us a blow-by-blow on the fight, because, again, and the reason I want to get into some of this is because I want people that are listening to be able to have some hope that they can have an effect on their government if they know where to look and what to ask and if they know what laws are on their side. So what did you use to dig into this, and then what was the upshot or what was the outcome?
Well, without the internet and without the ability to get online and find the statutes, I don't think we could have accomplished it. In our situation, I took it to the township. We're a fire protection district in a single township, and the law says the township appoints those board members. So I wanted to know, how do you get on the board?
Sure.
And I was told, no, the county board appoints them. And that led to uncovering of one residence just across the street from our district line that had been annexed, or another township, but they annexed into our fire department illegally. So therefore, since we were a two-township fire department, the county board does the appointments. So we actually, our township supervisor and myself, put our heads together and we took court action, and we got that whole process of the annexation reversed. We were back to a single township fire department, and the township trustees appoint our fire department trustees, and we remove them from office.
And so that was all after digging this up, that there was some really kind of shady stuff going on. And again, this is a very low level, a local situation. This is not, you know, some high-level, high-stakes game, but yet there was a fairly significant amount of local money involved in that bank account.
Yeah, about $120,000. And I was of the opinion, if you're going to take the people's tax money, you need to buy the equipment that it was meant for.
Sure.
And that wasn't happening.
Wow. So as a result of these changes, your fire department also changed. You're now actually in charge of the department. You're the chief.
I'm currently the fire chief.
Correct. Okay. And then the other changes that were positive was the membership. That I remember you telling me what happened with that and how that changed dramatically. It sounds really good.
We went from, at that time I was probably one of the youngest on the department, and currently I'm probably one of the oldest. We've got a whole new group of guys, younger guys that, you know, are wanting to be a part of it, but they were never allowed to because they didn't follow the orders of the old regime.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't in the click.
And I'm assuming that's the way we find a lot of these things are being run, is this is a good old boys club, and it's a click.
You betcha.
And if you're not from this county or you're not from this community, you're not going to be here in any capacity that matters.
You bet.
But the thing is, you've got, in your particular situation, you have people's lives at stake. I mean, had the individual who called in and their child, you know, wasn't breathing, if the person who had taken the call would have known about that, they could have walked that person through,
through basic CPR.
That's right.
You bet.
And so that, I mean, in your particular situation, you've got people can live or die based on, it's not just negligence, it's death. I mean, there's other aspects of this that are far greater, and I guess that's one of the reasons that prompted you to move, I assume.
Well, there's a lot of factors to it. There's so much I don't even know where to start. But as an example, if you call in, if you're in a car accident, you're expecting somebody to show up with the jaws of life and cut you out. That's the American Fire Service. We had past administration says, well, all we do is fight fires. We don't do rescue.
Oh, my gosh. No.
I didn't know that was an option.
Well, apparently it is for some people. I'm not supposed to be, but whatever. When we come back from a break, we're going to continue our talk. And I want to get into some more information about what you've been finding out. I'll ask John to fill in some of the things, as I know he's been on a couple of cases that he's been digging on. And then I want to talk some more about getting the word out. Also, don't forget, we've got a call-in number, 217-359-5483. We would like you to be a part of the conversation. Please give us a ring and let us know what you think. We'll be back on the other side of a break, so stay
with us. Looking forward
to talking to you. You betcha.
It's that time of year when you're looking for something to do for the kids. Summertime. And the University of Illinois has tons of activities at their affiliated summer camp program. Great for the local community. You can find out more about the U of I summer camps that will be available this year at engage.illinois.edu. Again, if you'd like to know more about the opportunities at the University of Illinois for your youngsters this summer, you can check it out at the website engage.illinois.edu.
Yes, we are. The Edgar County Watchdogs, Kirk Allen and John Kraft, and we appreciate them coming in tonight because they've given us some good information already about how local citizens can really have an impact, and a positive one at that, where we can actually see some positive changes in government. John Kraft, you've been doing some work in this too. Give us a rundown of some of the cases that you've actually been digging on yourself, because it's really is a good joint effort here.
Well, one of the first ones where we had to take to court was with our local water district, and they were fighting, giving me one simple piece of paper that involved a ad in the local newspaper, and they wanted to charge me like $71 for it. I took them to court, and they ended up settling, and then...
When you say give you a piece of paper, I
explain
assume,
that, please.
Yeah, you're talking about the freedom of information again, where they are required to give you this information.
Yeah, I did a Freedom of Information Act request for an ad they put in the local newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And they decided that they wanted to charge like $71 for that one piece of paper with the printed ad on it.
And where did that come from? Did they just pull that number out of the backside there?
Well, some public bodies decide not to keep public records, and then when they don't, there's always a record somewhere. If they don't keep it, which they're required to do, they're required to go to the people that do keep it, which happen to be the engineer firm in town.
I see.
And Kirk Allen did the initial FOIA request. They charged them $71. They tried to charge them $71 for that piece of paper to get it from the engineer firm. That wasn't going to work because they're not allowed to charge the public for the document.
So because they didn't keep the record, they basically lost the money by having to recreate the document out of this other file from a company that's going to charge them to dig it up, basically.
Right. So I turned around and did a FOIA request for Kirk's FOIA request, meaning they couldn't charge two people twice for the same piece of paper, which is what they tried to do.
I see. So let's take one step back. And what was this key piece of paper that they didn't really want to give up or divulge? Or what was it that they were, you know, charging the 71? What was so valuable about that one piece of information?
Absolutely nothing. It was a printout of an ad for soliciting bids.
Really?
Decatur.
Interesting. So when a government agency gets these things, a lot of times what I gather from talking to you guys is that they really don't want to cooperate at all. Is that pretty much the upshot?
That would be correct. And that's the situation we're in down in Arcola Township right now. And I've got a court case, a civil case against denial of a FOIA request down there already. And they've already denied a second one. And tomorrow, as they're due on their third one, they'll probably deny that one, too.
Now, if I read correctly...
So if they deny that, what's the reaction?
Well, is the penalty when you go to court, you deny something... I read this, and maybe I'm wrong. Aren't they liable for up to $5,000 each time they do that?
Well, we have to prove that they knew they were supposed to provide the information, and mm-hmm. they willingly didn't provide it, and that they didn't provide it in bad faith.
I see. So that seems like a high burden of proof, but I have a feeling, just knowing what's going on behind the scenes here, and I'll bring this out, but you guys, when you talk about watchdogs, this isn't just you guys going out and kind of shuffling some papers around. Sometimes people come to you as whistleblowers, and they will give you some information that gives you a starting point. Is that not correct?
That is correct. That's what happens probably 90% of the time, like in Arcola.
And thank goodness for whistleblowers, I will say that, because if we don't have them, if we don't have people that are already in government that are willing to stand up and say, you know what we're doing is wrong, we need to get this out, then we need people like you guys that will act on that. I don't know how you get around it. So it's really important. It's sort of a relationship that I gather is there between the public or the sometimes the officials and the watchdog group to get that information. It may require a whistleblower.
That is correct, because a lot of times we don't even the public body might just say we don't have it when we actually have our own copy from the whistleblower.
Now, when that happens, I guess they get in bigger trouble, don't they? Because now you've got the proof that you need that, yes, they willfully denied it, they knew they were supposed to, and they're hiding something.
But is that legally admissible as evidence in a court case if you have a copy of it and you didn't get it through a FOIA request?
Kirk, you're shaking your head.
Some of them were obtained through previous FOIA requests.
And they forget what they give you.
Correct.
So what we have here, it sounds like, is we've got a lot of guys running around kind of protecting their turf. They don't really want to cooperate with anybody that's on the outside. Heaven forbid a citizen that comes and asks for something, because after all, you know, everybody in government knows they're not really serving the citizens, but it's just the citizens that are fooled to think the government serves them. Is that what we're finding here a lot of times?
Pretty much. The records are public records, and where we obtain them from, they can't deny that they're a public record.
Sure.
How we got it, as long as we got it legally, it's admissible. Okay. Now, I'm not an attorney, but we did stay at Holiday Inn Express last night.
Are you driving a drag racer?
I guess the real question is, do we deal with deep throat here? I mean, is it that bad? Are we?
I'll give you an example. You know, we get calls from a lot of different folks, a lot of different whistleblowers, and one of the cases we're working on at a state level, back in April, actually it was May 9th, I did a FOIA to the comptroller for some travel vouchers, and it was a list of 11 people. And I got a few travel vouchers back, but four key executives, I didn't get a single travel voucher back. Last week, a week and a half ago, through another agency of the state, I got the travel vouchers that fit that time frame that the comptroller didn't give them to me.
So now you've got the proof that they held them back.
Absolutely.
So now what? What's the next step?
Public exposure. And that particular case, that's one of the cases we're working real close with Adam Angieski on a state level. And that deals with Obamacare and this whole Medicaid, Medicare scandal that's going on with the state of Michigan right now.
And has that really come to light? Now, this is something that I know you and I have talked about off the mics, but there is something brewing here, and I guess it's already out in the open in other states where there's a problem with a company that's supposed to be working with Obamacare and transitioning states into it.
Correct. There's a company out of Maryland, CNSI, that's worked. They had their contract pulled in Louisiana. Actually, they pulled it and voided the contract, and basically it appears, based on the news reports down there, there's going to be some there's already federal, you know, investigations going on, but it was enough that the governor pulled it. Well, that same company has been working with Michigan. Now, Illinois is supposed to be ready to go live on this system October 1st, and instead they did an intergovernmental agreement which circumvented procurement laws, and now we're letting Michigan do our Medicaid, Medicare billing through this company, CNSI.
Well, Michigan's got such a wonderful state. I mean, look how well they've managed Detroit and helped them out, and, you know, they're flat busted broke. I mean,
that's pretty high level corruption, and it sounds like there's more to come. Do you guys ever feel threatened because of what's coming out? I mean, I guess maybe I hit on something there.
Well, there's a lot of idle threats. I mean, you know, we're upsetting their apple cart. I don't make my living there locally, and they can't affect me, and it bothers them big time. But, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. That's how they've controlled people. They put the fear of God into you, and they make you think that you can't do this, or you're going to have this, you know, repercussion or that repercussion. But what we're finding, they're just the bully on the block. You stand up to them, and lo and behold, they're not the big shot they think they are.
Well, because there are laws, but have you had problems getting local judges to uphold these laws? Because that has been a question that some people have asked me. They ask, well, you know, these judges, are they really for the citizen?
It's interesting. More often than not, the challenge has been at the state's attorney level, getting them to actually prosecute the guy next door in their office or the local corruption. You know, what happened in the days back when public corruption was, you know,
considered a problem?
That was the pinnacle of a state's attorney, to go after public corruption.
Oh yeah.
Well, what's the reason, in your opinion? Is that because of the politicization of that office? They're worried about getting reelected?
Yeah, I would say more so than not. It's a stepping stone to being a judge, and that's what a lot of them want to be. In our FOIA cases, we file those pro se. And actually, John's had one that actually went before a judge. All the others, they knew it was a loser for them, and they settled every one of them. So we've not had to actually be in front of a judge for a final determination yet. You know, we've been able to master the law pretty well, but I'll let John cover that little dress down that the judge did, because I think he did a good job on that one case that, you know, he actually got in front of the judge on.
Which case was this, John? What county were you in?
That would be Edgar County, and that was with the water district and that one piece of paper we were talking about.
What did the judge have to say there?
Well, he basically dressed down their attorney for 10 to 15 solid minutes.
Really?
And looked at me and asked me if I had anything to add, and I just basically said, no, I think you said everything.
So he didn't like what was going on. He knew that it was not right.
Correct.
So that's at least that's a good thing. I think you're right about the state's attorneys, but when the state's attorneys don't act, then it requires yet another step, and it sort of puts you to the Attorney General's office, which they're not known for stopping corruption. Take a look at Chicago as a prime example, and then say, well, if they can't do that, who downstate are they going to help if they don't stop the stuff in Chicago? What happens when the state's attorney doesn't want to prosecute?
Let's back up to the Attorney General real quick. There is another avenue besides a civil suit, and that would be filing what they call a request for review on FOIA denials with the Attorney General.
Sure.
We've had some of them out there I've been trying to get records for 2 years from a local public body in Edgar County.
Two years?
And we are preparing a series of articles on the utter failure of the Attorney General to address the issues.
Of course, the Attorney General being closely tied to the Chicago machine doesn't seem to help us either. So I guess it does go back to this idea that you could file your own lawsuits and then take it into the courts yourself.
Correct. And like Kirk said, we've only had to actually appear in court once. I've got a feeling I'm going to have to appear in Douglas County, but I believe it'll only be for a one-time appearance, and they'll probably end up settling that one, too.
So when we come back, we're going to take a break. It's the top of the hour. I would like to get into this case in Ford County that we just had, where we've got a health department situation up there that seemed to be out of control. So when we come back, the Edgar County Watchdogs will continue talking about cleaning up government all around the area, certainly in this region within our listening area. And I think it's a good thing. I'm glad they're here. So we appreciate them coming in tonight.
Yes, we do. And we're going to We would ask those of you out in listening land to give us a call, 359-5483. And, you know, we're asking people to get engaged. We just got to stop standing on the sidelines, folks. We need to get in the battle. I know it sounds difficult, but you know what? Stop sitting in front of your TV set. Get off your proverbial tuchus and get into the fight.
He can say that because he's Jewish. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Think carrying 10 or 20 pounds of extra weight isn't much? A few extra pounds each year can cause joint pain and lead to serious chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease. And a lot of those aches and pains we blame on aging could also be caused by weight gain. Wouldn't you like to drop that weight and stop picking up more? Find out how at hhs.gov/onepoundatatime. Because while obesity happens 1 pound at a time, so does preventing it. Brought to you by HHS and National Institutes of Health.
The following program seamlessly weaves views and opinions with the news of the day. Bailey and Binsner realize it may be hard to distinguish the two. So they remind you at this time that the views and opinions expressed on Truth Talk Radio are theirs and the opinions of their guests. They may not necessarily represent the views of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. They cordially invite you to grab a refreshment and join them in their discussion at 217-359-5483. Roll the open. Truth Talk Radio is up next.
Do not adjust the radio. We are controlling the signal. For the next 60 minutes, you will experience changes in perception. We are in control of the horizontal and vertical paradigm. Your unconventional wisdom download is about to begin. This is Truth Talk Radio, coming to you from a nondescript radio center and beaming truth in all directions from behind the pop metal microphones. I'm Bailey, and he's Binsner.
Well, we're talking about really cleaning up local corruption. That's what our last half hour is. That's what the next half hour will be about with the Edgar County Watchdogs. Kirk Allen and John Kraft are with us tonight. Again, thanks a lot, gentlemen, for being here. And let's continue our discussion. You guys you're finishing one situation right now, finishing up with it, up in Ford County, where the Ford Iroquois Health Department, I guess they were thinking that it was a great idea to start operating a health department over in Indiana with no jurisdiction there, of course, and certainly not any Indiana tax money involved. But then that got you guys looking more closely at the situation, and there were a whole lot more things in that nest to uncover. What happened up there, and what was the upshot?
Well, that whole investigation started with the whistleblower. Actually, we got three different requests from some as far down as Effingham in regards to Ford Iroquois County Health Department.
Really?
And
their fame or infamy had gone far and wide.
Yeah, the people knew. You know, you had a turnover of 92 people with one administrator in 3.5 years. That tells you something.
That's a
oh,
lot.
Oh, wow.
That's
I didn't even know that number. That is amazing.
That would outdo McDonald's.
For 40 employees and a turnover of 92 people in 3.5 years.
Wow. That's a total revolving door there.
Right.
So what exactly did you find? There were so many things that came up. Hit some of the highlights of what actually you did find there and what you're looking at now as sort of the mop-up, because you ended up with the counties fairly well ousting the director after all the evidence you presented. But one county didn't want to and the other county did. What was that all about?
Well, it's back to that resistance of accepting that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we heard in meetings, well, there's no facts presented that there's anything wrong. Well, when I try to present the facts, in fact, in one of those meetings, I presented that they had lost $1 million in one division of that healthcare organization in 3 years, and one of the board members from Ford County asked, well, do you have any, you know, evidence of that? And I said, well, yes, I do. And then she instantly retracted her comment and didn't even pick up the paper to look at it. And it was handed back to me by their state's attorney and said that they're not taking exhibits at that meeting.
And this exhibit actually was coming from the county itself from a Freedom of Information request. Is
correct.
That not correct?
It was a FOIA for their financials for their home health program. So it was... It was quite an interesting ride. The first thing that anybody can do, you file the FOIA and ask for something as simple as a transaction history. If you get a transaction history, you can look. It's just like looking at your checkbook to find out, you know, where your money's going. And that transaction history typically will tell you what's going on. And we saw everything from gift cards to donations to charities to, I mean, you name it, private foundations. It was pretty overwhelming what they were spending their money on.
So when you get into a situation like that where you're finding stuff out that really doesn't shed a good light on the organization, on the county, on whoever's in charge, and this is basically a county board that's supposed to have oversight over a separate board, a health department board, do you get a lot of resistance to the point where people are threatening, or how does that resistance come? It may not just be toward you, but it could be in other. It may come out in other respects too.
Well, in Iroquois County, what was interesting there, and it was in February when we were first contacted to start looking into it. I spoke with the county chairman up there, probably early March, and we actually went to one of their meetings up there. And they were leaders. They actually were taking steps to fix the issue of going into Indiana. Mm-hmm. What we had found was above and beyond what they had uncovered.
Sure.
But they took the appropriate measures to go forward and actually, you know, fix the things that we were identifying. Whereas Ford County, see, it's a multi-county health department. Ford County just basically refused to listen to anything. And they absolutely had been snowballed by this administrator. And they were actually behind-the-scenes efforts with a private attorney that they had illegally hired to orchestrate keeping things from the Iroquois County board members. And we uncovered all of those emails, you know, in our FOIA requests. And it's pretty overwhelming, and there's still a lot of fallout to come. I mean, we've got documents as recent as today.
Oh, really? Well, there are some other things, too, that I'm aware of that you're looking at, things that are... involving possibly even criminal charges with regard to some money that we don't know where that's going yet. Am I correct there? I mean, this is still up in the air and it hasn't been decided, but it's a possibility.
Well, I know that early on the Attorney General was contacted to look at some things, and at that point they weren't willing to take the case. Whether they are after all the additional stuff has been uncovered or not, I'm not sure. I don't think the Iroquois State's Attorney has taken things off the table. I mean, he's trying to fix things, and I think with the evidence that's there, I'd be surprised if at a minimum an official misconduct charge doesn't come down. But that's back to the State's Attorney being able to do their job, and will they do their job?
Yeah, and that's the political
situation. That's a big question anymore,
too,
isn't it?
We've got Chris calling in on line one. Chris, welcome to the program. What comment have you got tonight?
Well, I've actually got a little bit of backstory to my comment to begin with, because it does deal with the topic of corruption.
Sure.
Well, I've got a great friend of mine, and his older brother was actually shot and killed about 7 years ago.
Okay.
Here in town, and I was out of town when it happened, so I wasn't able to experience what was happening firsthand.
Yes.
But the court case basically, what ended up happening is the person who shot and killed my brother's best friend ended up getting manslaughter, and later it went, and he got a couple years in jail because of it, but there was evidence to suggest it was clearly a murder, and it was just a very big deal, especially for the family. So, later, they took it to a civil case against the person who who shot the gun, and the judge at the civil case basically said, "I don't understand how this wasn't a murder." And I was just wondering, how do you find out that information? Like, is there court records for civil cases where you can actually read what was said?
Actually, verbatim? Yes, there is. John, you're going to take that one?
Yeah, I believe the question was, how do you get the information?
That's it, yes.
You can just go to the courthouse and photocopy every document out of the court case.
Now, there should be a case number for your case that you're interested in. There is a computer system in that courthouse that has those case numbers, and when you look them up, you're going to find that the case number will be listed. It'll have documents. Then you can request from the clerk the files. Is that how that works?
That is correct. And you'll have to pay the clerk for the
But
for
a lot of
pages.
Times, and I've been in, at least in the criminal courts, and I don't know how it is in civil courts, but in criminal courts, you can actually view the file without copying it, and then you can see what copies you may or may not want to take with you.
That is correct.
So, yeah, you could even take your own picture. If you want to take a camera, just take a picture of the document, and you don't have to pay the fee to get the copies.
Oh, nice. So how do I find out? Can I do like a search of just the names that I don't have the actual?
You should be able to. Yeah, and the names would come up in the computer system too.
Yeah, you
too.
Just go to the courthouse and just ask the clerk to look up the name.
Yeah, and Chris, thank you for your call tonight. That's a prime question for people is how they get the information. Now you guys are talking to me, and Chris is bringing up a good point. Now he's wanting to know about courts, but that works the same way. These are all public documents, and so if you have suspicion that there's something that isn't right, whether it be with the county or a certain board, these are all public bodies. The documents are public, so there are methods to get those documents, and the freedom of information for public bodies, not necessarily courts, but public bodies, is what is the mechanism in this state. So when you do that, you have a procedure that you go through. Now, if you get stonewalled, you hope that you've got enough inside information to get past the stonewall. Basically, the way I get it.
That is correct.
But getting back to this issue of the threats and how people on the other side try and stop this, John, I'm sure you've got stories to tell, too. You've had some issues where people have probably wanted to, put the quahilas on what you're doing.
Well, a lot of what they do, they will go twist the arms of people, especially if they're business owners or they work in a business that do something as simple as click like on our Facebook page. They will just be inundated with phone calls. And
now, didn't you have a situation, and this was brought up at one of the meetings to try and be derogatory toward you because of the work you were doing, but you had a situation where you actually lost a job. The reason being was you went to too many county board meetings or too many meetings, and the people who were involved in that job got told that if they didn't get rid of you, there would be problems on their money line.
Well, yeah, well, the official reason is they contracted my job out to a company.
Uh-huh. Sure.
But the real reason is because I was attending meetings and the people that donated to the private organization that I worked at basically threatened to withhold the donations.
So, again, there is this threat of reprisal if you get the whistleblower situation going or the watchdog group, because nobody wants this watchdog looking over their shoulder, especially not the government, apparently, because I don't know what has gotten into our governments. I really don't. I'll tell you this off the top. I have been around government all my life. My father is an attorney. He ran for office probably at least four or five different times. Didn't win because he was the wrong registration for the place where we lived. He was the opposite of where we grew up. But and that's politics. But I'm very familiar with this kind of thing to the extent that in the bigger picture, we have a lot of crime that goes on that we hear about eventually. We got Blagojevich. We've got, what's the name before that? The other governor that went
Ryan.
To jail. Ryan. And so we never hear about the local level, but it's the picture that you guys are painting is more of a microcosm of, I think, what's going on in the bigger picture. Where we've got all these issues coming up locally that mirror the bigger picture entirely. Isn't that what we're seeing, basically?
That is correct. And back on the, sorry to backtrack, but the intimidation, we Early on, we got with a regional newspaper called Disclosure News. They have a website, Disclosure News Online.
Sure.
They print articles. It's a monthly news magazine, and we had four businesses in Paris that would sell the newspaper.
So once you got on there, that was a protection then in a respect for you, because you kind of have now tagged yourselves as journalists.
Yeah, and that was somewhat of a protective measure, and it was a lot easier to get the word out. People tend to believe a paper they can hold in their hand over something they read over the internet.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing, because the gentleman who had broke the story on the Obama's what was the organization that he ran in Chicago?
Which one?
Acorn. O'Keefe. There was a guy named O'Keefe. He broke that story. He just came out with a book describing all the detailing the events of the things that he did, you know, to get the information, just like you two are doing. And he talked about the stories, and he encouraged people to go out and do it, because he said once you start doing it, he says you get a reputation, and people start, you know, you're developing it, obviously, and that's what you want to do, because you want people to talk to you about what's going on. You don't want the facts hidden any longer.
Right, and we like I said, we've got our webpage. We post to Facebook every time we post something. We've got a Twitter feed. We get published in Disclosure, and when the organizations in Paris were selling the paper, they were physically threatened.
Really?
Some to lose their liquor license, some just threatened to lose all their business, so they had to quit selling the Disclosure.
Wow, that's
And that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It doesn't surprise me. When we come back, we will continue with our discussion. We also have a caller on the line. Please stay on the line. We will be back in a moment. We will take your call. Truth Talk Radio will continue, and we're talking about local corruption and how to clean it up. There is some hope out there, so don't give up hope.
Locally programmed music without the commercial interruptions. We are Community Radio WEFT. Truth Talk Radio is a grassroots effort to give you more than the usual gobbledygook on mainstream media. Binsner and Bailey are not afraid to talk about real issues with a fresh perspective of their own. That's why we call it their opinions and not the opinions of this station. Oh yeah, and they don't offer any legal or medical advice or cooking directions. Thank you so much. Binsner and Bailey, we're talking about local corruption, and the name of the song you're listening to is Powerhouse. And I thought, well, it was an appropriate one, because we've got a powerhouse here of corruption fighters in Kirk Allen and John Kraft from Edgar County Watchdogs. Chris, a different Chris from here in town, is on the line with us. Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, thank you. Actually, I'm not from town.
Okay.
Actually, I had a phone call that said that Edgar County Watchdog Group was on the air, and my biggest question is, have you guys noticed that there are other little corruption groups starting up to pop up in the immediate area, such as, have you checked out Coles County Corruption yet?
Yep, we've noticed them on the website. In fact, we haven't reached out to talk to them just yet, but yeah, there's a lot of groups popping up all over the place. And,
right. Well, we would really, you know, that's what we need to do. We kind of probably all ought to start communicating with each other. You know, because really, when you put one thing out, like on your website, or, you know, that's just basically, you know, it goes just a little bit farther than word of mouth. I mean, you know, if we could get more people to see what's really going on, because, you know, it's crazy in Coles County. That's where I live. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
How they operate the legal system in town. It's,
Well,
it makes you afraid to leave your house after a certain time of night for fear of being in trouble. Just like Edgar County.
That's ridiculous.
That's sad. That's a sad commentary in government. Chris, if you would give us a ring back, I'm gonna take you off the line. I want you to call back, and the call screener is going to get your phone number because the guys here would like to give you a call off the air. But yeah, go ahead and, Kirk, address that issue of communicating together, because I think that's a really great idea. Once people start to band together, we can fight this corruption in a much bigger sense.
Yeah, we're working on setting up a statewide regional training for exactly what we do at all levels. It's duplicatable. Anybody can do it. And we're going to be putting together, it looks like, at least 15 to 17 regional watchdog sites of people doing the same thing that we're doing. And once that training gets in play and we start, you know, replicating that, I think you're going to see a snowball effect, because it's already happening in the local areas to the point where we can't handle all the leads.
Wow, that's great. I know I even had a lead for you at one point that you've been following up on and getting some interesting responses from my county. Not surprising. And it's kind of funny, because I don't think that anybody in government was expecting this to happen, or at least they don't seem to be expecting it. But I will make one comment, and they probably do know that something's coming based on so-called, quote, scientific polls, because the pollsters actually ask questions, and they get answers, and they do focus groups. So I'm sure there is a movement, and where I'm going with this is, there's probably a movement of people out there that are very disgusted with the way even local government is being run, because it does not represent the people's interests anymore. And that's why, and this is where I don't understand why the government officials in there don't get it, because if you are being fed a constant diet of conservatism, or, you know, constitutionalism, and, oh, our government represents us, and then that isn't what's happening, and people begin to wake up and they realize that, there's going to be a lot of anger out there, and it's going to be directed at people that are sitting in those seats, so they'd better be paying attention and doing it right the first time.
Yeah, the anger goes all the way up to the Senate, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, we get leads in from all over the state, and we work what we can, but you know you're making a difference when you get a phone call from a senator that is telling you, basically, you need to stay out of this county, you know, for your own good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty,
and you did, I mean,
is that a veiled threat?
Yeah, I took it as a veiled threat.
It's maybe not a veiled threat. That's an open threat to me.
What's interesting with that, that just gives us the persistence to go look in that county.
Sure.
And lo and behold, every time when they try to hide it, or they try to force us out or scare us out, there's always something there to expose. And it's not like they can hide it. You know, bank records, they're always going to be there.
Sure.
And they're all FOIA-able. And
yep.
When you start looking at transaction histories, that's when it makes a difference.
Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, I ran a business for enough years. You can do a huge amount of damage with an audit trail. Trust me, you can backtrack it all the way to the source.
And let's qualify that, a forensic audit. These audits that are done by the state now, as we saw up in Fort Iroquois County, they bragged about passing their audits every year with no problem. How is it we found so many illegal expenditures?
And you didn't even have to look very far. I mean,
no.
The amount of paper that you uncovered was a pretty sizable stack, but it didn't require layers and layers of it. It was just the first layer that showed this stuff.
And let's not forget Dixon, Illinois.
And
$54 million of embezzlement over 20 years. They passed every audit every year.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, how is that possible? A woman can steal that much money, and then the county not feel the effects of that money being, you know, gone.
Control. No,
huh?
They're in control. They took a little bit away each year.
How is it exactly that these audits are passed? Is it because they're not looking?
It's
how
not
are
a,
they directed?
It's not a pass or fail. It's mm-hmm. a matter of $100 come in, did $100 go out?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's not
they
accounting.
No, they didn't look to see did the $100 get spent legally. They just looked to see if the columns add up, and if they add up, then as far as they're concerned, it's all accounted for.
So it's a balance sheet, but it's not really a tracking of anything.
Correct.
Well, so, I mean, that's easy to do. I can do that. I mean, it doesn't take anything. I get my 12-year-old to figure that one out. I mean, that's pretty easy accounting.
How did our local governments get into this shape in the first place?
Failure to read. They don't learn their job. They don't read the statutes. Nobody holds them accountable. State's attorneys don't hold them accountable. It's a good old boy system. It's your friend down the road that ran for office, and gosh, he would never steal from you. And for what we do, a lot of people, the reason they come to us, we're not afraid to go and address these public bodies. We have nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
The locals that are bringing this information to us, they're scared to death to speak out.
Sure, because they are...
The repercussions.
They work in those communities. Their jobs could be attacked. Their relatives may be under fire for their jobs. All about that kind of a tit-for-tat at that point.
And we've gone to enough county board meetings as an example. It's amazing how many times you can go to those meetings and they refuse to answer a single question. And this is right out of the Illinois state statutes for county boards. At each regular and special meeting, which is open to the public, members of the public and employees of the county shall be afforded time, subject to reasonable constraints, to comment to or ask questions of the board. Why do you think we are allowed to ask questions of the board?
You would assume that that's so the board can answer the question.
Yeah, the legislative intent was to get answers, yet they take the position, well, we don't have to answer.
Because the law doesn't say they must answer or they shall answer. It doesn't say anything about an answer.
Correct. So they take that position, and
that's right.
When they do that, when they're quiet and they refuse to answer very simple questions, we know we have to go back and keep digging because they've got something to hide. If mm-hmm. they didn't, they would have an open-door policy. They would answer your questions. There would be nothing to fear, nothing to hide.
Does this state really have open government, in your opinion?
Absolutely not.
Okay. That's what I thought, and that's what I've seen in my
Very few political leaders that I've run into, and I'll reference Iroquois County. Those folks up there on that board, and I believe there's 20 or 21 board members.
Yes.
Of all the counties we dealt with, they are the leaders in fixing what they find is wrong. They've had a lot of things wrong, but they've taken the steps to fix it, and that's the difference between good government and bad government.
Now, there was another, was there another official up there that also had to leave office as a result of what you guys found?
Correct.
And that was Iroquois again, but that was one of the fixes. They took the action they needed to take.
Oh, and the individual took it almost immediately. He was a school board member, elected mm-hmm. school board member,
sure.
as well as a supervisor of assessments. That's a statutorial conflict of interest. You can't hold both those positions. Now, previous administration had told him there was no conflict. They asked the clerk. Well, I don't know about most clerks, but they're not attorneys. That's a question for the state's attorney or the attorney general. And there is a conflict of interest. The state's attorney informed him, yes, it's a conflict. And within 2-3 days at the next school board meeting, he resigned. He did the right thing. We had our supervisor of assessment sat on. He was our multi-township assessor as well. Or our deputy assessor. It took us 9 months to get him out of office.
Wow.
Nine months before the state's attorney finally said, you got
to
go.
Okay, so let's speak to a larger issue, all right, which is a national issue. Because if this is a microcosm of what's going on in our state, and we know that, I know that Illinois is probably one of the most corrupt states in the country. I mean, let's be realistic about it. But if this is a microcosm of what's going on in our state, even in areas and counties where you think it's a good old boy and everybody's taking care of everything, how do you expand that to a national audience, and beginning to get people involved in a national movement? Because maybe you might be the creator of a national movement that begins to spread throughout the whole country, where people begin to take back the things that ICLEI is trying to steal, Agenda 21, because there's a lot of theft going on by these organizations that are trying to take control of the United States, and people don't know about them.
Well, I think the key to what we're doing is it's duplicatable, it's very simple, and if we can set a pattern of proof that we have fixed our local government, and I believe, as I'll use my hometown of Kansas, Illinois as an example, we have fixed 95% of the problems in that little community. And we're a small community, but for the most part they're fixed, and now people are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Which is outstanding.
You bet. We take that to the county level. We have other villages that are stepping up. When you make it duplicatable and more people get involved and we set up that foundation of training, if we prove we can change one county at a time, just like we did up in Ford and Iroquois, we fixed that health department to a degree. I mean, a huge step was accomplished. It took several months, but it was accomplished. Once that track record is established, people see that we can make a difference.
One of the keys to the success, I think, too, is publishing what you're finding in forums on the internet and also through this paper so that other people can not only see what's wrong in their county, but then they can begin to speak out and maybe have some solace in thinking, wow, somebody may do something. Is that publication aspect also important to get the word out that we are trying to fix things?
It's absolutely the most important, because what separates us from your typical media, we don't just report a story. We actually post the documents that we've FOIA'd and draw that directly to the statutes to prove what they're doing wrong. And when you have the documents that people can click on and download and see that they're doing things illegally and they can read the statutes, we put the links to them, people realize the media is not doing their job. But well, I think we all know that.
Well, yeah, that's
not a secret.
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah, that's really the sad part. We got all these, you know, small town newspapers that are dying, you know, starving for advertisement. And if they just did their job, they'd have more business than they know what to do with. I mean, just by doing what you're doing, right?
But actually, no, what he's saying, too, is that these newspapers may actually fear for their very lives. If they start publishing this, all the advertising dries up.
It absolutely does. And case in point, we just ran an article today on two deputies that an arbitration board ruled they'd get their jobs back. And in the media report, it said that these two officers are in good standing with the Fraternal Order of Police. Now, one of these deputies was basically charged and was proven to have violated a woman's civil rights in pursuit of his duties, and the county had to pay that lawsuit. Now, how does a person that violate an officer who violates someone's civil rights be in good standing with the Fraternal Order of Police? But that's the report that came across the media, so everybody thinks, well, he's in good standing, so he gets his job back.
Just like the report, oh, we've passed all of our audits.
Correct. Or,
oh,
you got it.
The Attorney General hasn't filed any charges. They must be okay.
Nobody asked the right questions.
That, you hit the nail on the head. They don't ask the right questions.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but let me have you guys stay over just to the other side of the hour, and we'll do a wrap-up, anything that we didn't touch on that you may want to mention before we let you go, because this is such good information, I think people need to hear it. So we appreciate you being with us on Truth Talk Radio. We will be back in just a moment.
If you love history, but you don't have time to travel to libraries or museums, now you can have fun right at your fingertips. All you need is a Facebook connection or a Google Plus account. Then search for the group called Living History of Illinois and Chicago. You can read in-depth history, stories, even view photos from the archives dating the 1880s. It's free to join the group, Living History of Illinois and Chicago. You can post comments as well as browse. Now you can find your historical fix right at your fingertips. The green way to explore Illinois. Save gas and stay cozy. It's just a click away.
Beaming truth in all directions. This is Truth Talk Radio, WEFT 90.1 FM, Champaign.
We're back.
It's Truth Talk Radio, and we're going to wrap it up with the Edgar County Watchdogs, Kirk Allen and John Kraft. Thanks so much for being with us. Anything else you want to add before we go? Because I think we've hit on a raw nerve here, and people are interested in this.
Well, one thing that's key also, other than the Freedom of Information Act, is the Open Meetings Act.
Okay.
People need to know that they have a right to address the public officials, they have a right to audio record, and they have a right to video record any public meeting for any reason, and they don't have to state why they want to record it.
And they can publish that because it's an open meeting. You all publish on the internet these clips that you record on your video recorders. I've seen them on there. Oh, that's another thing, too. Tell people where they can find out about you. What's your website, and where will they find the Edgar County Watchdogs on the web?
EdgarCountyWatchdogs.com is our website, and there's typically six main stories up, the most recent. You can go to past articles and see, you know, basically 3 years of effort that we've put together. It's quite a database of information that you can really learn from on what we do and how we do it. basically, though, we have gone through Edgar County for the most part with a fine-tooth comb and been able to identify what to look at in every other county.
You know, so that was the model that you used, your own home county.
You bet.
That's good. It's a microcosm of what you saw.
And I want to emphasize, most of the things that we've uncovered have led to one person who stood up and either got us the information or, you know, somebody local asked us to come do something. But one person can make a huge difference. And that's all we need is folks to contact us, and we do the rest from there. And those who want to get involved, we help them get involved. We can train them. But the key is you can make a difference.
I think that is the message
of
the hour.
I we definitely are wholeheartedly behind you guys. And I think that the reality of you can make a difference is something that people want to know. And here's – I got a question for you. You don't have to answer it, but I got a question for you.
It's rhetorical.
Well, it's about the windmills. I mean, have you guys investigated any of that, any items regarding those little silly things?
It's interesting on the windmills. You know, they tried to pass – or they actually passed a windmill ordinance down in Edgar County, which was a joke. And fortunately, we don't have any down there yet. But what we found in other counties – a lot of the board members that are pushing to have a wind ordinance already have contracts with wind farms that they're getting money from. And I think when you look at the Prohibited Acts statute, that's in violation to be voting for something that directly or indirectly affects them financially.
I think you need to go to come here to Champaign County and look at our county board, because I got a feeling there's a bunch of people on that board have got some stuff that maybe not.
I have
so
a feeling the Champaign County board does not want to see the Edgar
there's
County
one,
watchdog
one thing they'll never get away
stuff.
From. The one thing they'll never get away from, the truth has no agenda.
Well, that's true.
That's
it doesn't.
Truth.
And, you know, that's another
that's
thing.
Very true.
When they accuse you of an agenda, they've probably got one themselves.
You betcha.
That's one thing I can say about these guys, and I haven't known them very long, but they don't get paid for their work. This is not some, agenda-driven thing where they're going to go out and run for office. That's another political statement that's been made behind the scenes to try and dissuade them and the people who are helping them. What this is it's about good government, and it's about time. It's about time that some citizens got together and said, you know, enough is enough. We've got to fix what's wrong, and we have to admit that there's something wrong. You can't, let's take it from a religious standpoint, you can't repent from a sin if you don't admit there's a sin, right?
Correct.
So, again, my hat's off to the Edgar County watchdogs.
It's the old thing, you know, it's law of physics says a body will stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. You guys are the start of the outside force
right.
to bring people into accountability.
And corruption has had momentum in this state for decades.
Yes, it has. I mean,
bet.
look at Chicago. It is a prime example of corruption. I mean, it's so deep and so thick. I mean, you couldn't even cut it with a saw. I mean,
as a naive businessman in 1993, I went to Chicago to sell our product, and I went to the fire academy, and on the second floor stairwell, I was told that this particular chief at the time, that he and his wife hadn't been to Disney World in 20 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I chuckled,
no.
And I said, gosh, I went when I was 10 or 11. It didn't even register. You might not. My grandparents took me there for vacation, and it didn't register what he was saying. And he says, you don't understand.
No.
If you want this purchased in the city of Chicago, you need to pay to play.
Oh, my gosh.
I still haven't paid to play. We can't be bought. The truth has no agenda. We're going to do what's right. And I do that in every aspect of my life, and I'd rather live in a glass house and fix these things than to be a part of the corruption that this state's faced with.
Kirk Allen, John Kraft, thank you so much for coming
in
tonight. We really appreciate it. We appreciate spreading the word that corruption doesn't have to be. We have a lot more to talk about and a short amount of time to get to it, so we will take a break and be right back. Thanks a lot for being with us.